In a few minutes, an effort to throw out the one thing many of us ever learned in school about banking, how all of your money doesn't just sit there in the bank's vault gathering dust. I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. More than 1,000 companies, from hardware manufacturers to phone companies to software makers, will attend the yearly extravaganza called the Mobile World Congress starting today in Barcelona. Look out for lots of news about high-end phones getting virtual reality. Samsung, for instance, just announced a little golf ball-shaped camera that creates the illusion that you're strolling through an image, letting you look around. The idea is to sell Samsung phones by bundling the camera with them. And on the other end of the spectrum, tech companies are also looking for new customers who still don't have their first smartphone. Nova Safa reports on that.
Smartphone makers have a problem, says Ramon Lamas, a mobile analyst at IDC.
You can't differentiate too much on these, you know, small glowing rectangles that we love to carry in our pockets.
For high-end makers, that means they need headline-grabbing new features. But Lamas, who's in Barcelona for the conference, is watching names such as ZTE, Micromax, and Xiaomi.
Companies that you and I may not be familiar with intimately, but, you know, these are companies that have a presence within emerging markets.
Like China and India, where they're already selling a lot of phones, Lama says new models at even lower prices will be aimed at markets in the Middle East and Africa. Gene Munster of Piper Jaffray says expect these phones to look like
the nice phones from 3 years ago.
But today, Munster says manufacturing costs are lower for older technologies, and that helps with price. Still, he says lower-cost phones in new markets are a gamble.
Unfortunately for those manufacturers, there's not a lot of profitability in those segments.
While the margins are thin, he says, there are a lot of new customers just waiting to build new habits. I'm Nova Safo for Marketplace.
Stock market is now open and things are up. The Dow Jones Industrial Average at the moment up 197 points, 1.2%. Similar percentage rises for the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ Composite Index. Stock prices tend to track crude oil prices these days, and oil is surging this morning. Crude is up 6.6% to $31.60 now. Six are dead, two are injured in a shooting spree in and around Kalamazoo, Michigan over the weekend. The alleged shooter, Jason B. Dalton, was an Uber driver who carried out the apparently random shootings from his car, possibly in between picking up fares. Authorities are saying Dalton did not have a criminal record. Uber has been criticized in some parts of the world for the quality of the checks it does on its drivers. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman has more on this. What does Uber check?
Uber uses several background vetting systems, and they should flag anyone on a sex offender registry, anyone with convictions for DUI or drugs, fatal accidents, any felony. Uber also pulls drivers' social security numbers, insurance records, and the like, though this might not pick up some older convictions. Now, the Trade Association for Taxi and Limo Services, which of course is battling Uber for market everywhere, charges that Uber's background checks are inadequate because they don't include fingerprints, they aren't done by law enforcement, and they of course don't include an in-person interview. And Uber itself has actually been experimenting, trying to get more inside information on its drivers, as in inside the car. It's got a pilot program in Houston monitoring drivers to try to flag dangerous driving and speeding.
All right. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman, thank you. One of my Wall Street sources thinks the financial media has been missing an earth-shattering story that he thinks deserves more attention. Jason Voss is content director at the CFA Institute, which licenses and tries to educate financial professionals. I invited him over to talk about the story to end all business stories. Jason, hello.
Hello. Nice to be here.
All right. So what is this blockbuster story? What's it about?
Fractional reserve banking.
I know. That means, right, that the local bank, when you put in your deposit, doesn't have to keep the whole thing.
Yeah, typically about 10% of the money that they lend out is available for deposit or on deposits. The issue is varying appetites for risk on the part of banks tend to lead to business cycles. So in other words, if they don't like to lend, magically, all of a sudden, money disappears from the economy because they're not making loans.
Oh, I see. And it's the decision at the banks. We're feeling a little risk averse. We're going to rein in our loans, and the economy suffers.
Exactly. So these Great Depression economists put forth this idea called the Chicago Plan, led by Irving Fisher, a Nobel Prize winner, in which he said, let's switch it to full reserve banking rather than fractional reserve, and that restores the creation of money to the central bank. the Chicago plant was put to a test by two IMF economists, and they found not only does it end bank runs, but it also massively reduces public debt as well as private debt without really altering economic growth.
Now, this all sounds wonderful unless you're a bank, because if you're stuck holding every dollar that comes in, it does make it harder to make money.
It massively does. And, you know, the question is what bank would endorse it? But governments are beginning to endorse this idea. The government of Iceland, for example, back in 2014, they commissioned a study, this issue, should we do it? And they concluded, yeah, this is great for Iceland. Iceland's leftist and liberal, but then the government of Switzerland, of all countries, announced that they're putting on a referendum that's going to be forthcoming.
So this is going to make everybody's heads hurt, because if this somehow gained steam beyond Switzerland, beyond perhaps Iceland, it would really turn banking on its head?
It absolutely would, and nobody's ever lived in an era with full reserve banking.
So if banks have to hold on to all the deposits, where are they going to get the money to lend to someone who would like to borrow?
So that's one of the wrinkles that needs to be determined. So what's being proposed by Switzerland's Vollgeld movement, they have suggested a committee, almost like the central bank currently, would just determine how much money to pump into the economy.
But that does underscore central bank power in that situation.
Oh, it most certainly would. Many people feel that central banks currently have too much power. And if this were to pass, they would probably have more, or at least a committee would. And that committee would, you know, ostensibly have a tremendous amount of power.
Jason Voss is content director at the CFA Institute here in New York, where he works to educate and engage financial professionals. Jason, thank you.
Thank you very much, David.
Now, I think I figured out why so few of us noticed this Switzerland and fractional reserve banking story originally. It broke December 24th when a lot of reporters were distracted by, I don't know, scotch tape, wrapping paper. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.